Hello, my Nutcracker Syndrome podcast listeners. I want to thank you all for being on this journey with me. It is, as of the day of this recording, it's December 7th, and we're coming up on my 1 year anniversary on December 19th for my kidney auto transplant, and that just feels wild. This has been a 2.5 year medical journey, at least when the onset of my symptoms started. I'd had some kind of symptoms prior to all that that now start making sense, but at least when my symptoms started getting bad enough and was affecting my life. In this episode, I want to talk about the most recent surgery I had. If you listen to the episode prior to this, I spoke a little bit about my hernia repair. And I want to go into a little bit more detail about that, given that when you go through a auto transplant, and more specifically, I went through UW Health. They do an open abdominal surgery. And anytime you have an abdominal surgery, and then if you intersect that with anything that's an open abdominal surgery, the risk gets higher. So if you have any type of abdominal surgery, there's a risk to develop a hernia. And then if you add an abdominal surgery that has an open abdominal procedure to it, the risk increases. So before I get into this episode, I want to say one thing. The first question anybody asks me is, well, what did UW Health do wrong that made you develop a hernia? I have asked that question to every surgeon that's on my medical team that I've had appointments with, and every one of them have been like, this is not UW Health's fault. Again, that is a risk of having one of these surgeries. And some people also intersected with that have a higher predisposition to developing hernias. And for me, I'm a very athletic person. I came out of the womb with muscles. And then I got really sick and I have not been able to exercise. I've had a major exercise intolerance for 2.5 years. A lot of the weight I lost, yes, was fat, but most of it was my muscle weight. I'm a dense lady. I'm a petite lady, but I'm a dense lady. And so whenever I followed another thing I want to say too is a lot of people are like, well, what did you do? Right? Like, so if it's not the surgeon's fault, then what did you do? And a lot of this is coming from a place of like, you're scared and you're fearful that this is going to happen to you. And that is valid. And that was another thing I asked the surgeons is I have always been somebody that follows protocols to a T. I don't push things. I don't, especially with a massive open abdominal surgery. I was not like, oh, whatever, I'm going to go lift weights when they tell me not to. I was walking most every day, about a mile or so. I took the dogs on a walk, get the blood flowing. And for that first 3 months, any type of I was doing a lot of like floor exercises to where I wasn't engaging my abs at all. And this is in combination with working with a physical therapist too. So just want to say that I did have medical eyes on me saying, yes, we can do this. And we were doing things like working on the floor, doing like 1 to 2 pound weights of me just like really working on my rotator cuffs, things like that. So like nothing that was actually impeding. When I would have my like 1 month follow-up, 3 month follow-up, like I was asking about these things, like, hey, are you all okay with this? And they were like, yes, absolutely. And then at the 3 month marker, they're like, yeah, you can obviously don't just go from not lifting anything to like pushing yourself and trying to do a 1 RM or one rep max or something. So I went slow even when I was fully cleared to lift heavier because again I've been the weakest I've ever been. So I was going to the gym, getting back in shape. There was never any one experience that was like I didn't hear a pop. There wasn't anything like that. And in May, it was like mid-May, I think I went out and I just noticed this small, like again, hernia. That it was an epigastric hernia, which means it was located above my belly button and below my sternum. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And so I think I've mentioned this before. I am a very resourceful, I have when my out-of-pocket max is met, I talk to my primary and I'm like, will you refer me to all these specialists so I can get other shit taken care of? Because again, it'll be $0. So I got referred to go see a transplant team here in Denver. And that's another thing too, I'll reiterate. Once you have a transplant, even if it's an auto transplant and you're not on immunosuppressants, they're like, go to transplant. Like they just you even if you have like a little infection and they see on this happened to me. Like I had a urinary tract infection recently. And when I went in, they were like, you need to go to the ER. Like they just saw the word transplant. And I was like, well, can I not just do antibiotics and see? No, you need to go to the ER. That shit's a little annoying, I have to say, but I also appreciate where they're coming from. I definitely understand, but as we all know with medical trauma, going into the ER for things like that is really frustrating. So I go to the transplant team here. He evaluates it and he's like, yeah, that's a pretty large hernia. Because again, and I had let him know, I had even shown photos, like this is when it started and you can tell it's getting bigger. So he approved. I said, you know, it's not really causing me a lot of pain now, but I think what I'm really nervous about is if I don't address this, like, you know, if I just keep it there, what are the risks? And he's like, well, yeah, like if it's continuing to get bigger now, which it does look like it is, you're risking, you know, it getting to the point sometimes where he did say, and this is what led me to agree to the surgery. He said, if you let it go long enough and the fact that it is getting bigger and bigger, it could get so big that it turns into actually a major surgery. Like it turned, we wouldn't even have the option to do it laparoscopically. And I really wanted to do it laparoscopically because I had just had this major open abdominal surgery. They did, whenever they scheduled me, they said, we are going to do it laparoscopically. However, we're going to say laparoscopic possible open surgery. So we get that approved through insurance in the off chance we get in there and it has to be open. Also, based on how large the hernia was. Now, before I get into the specifics, the results of the surgery were actually a lot worse. When I woke up, what was supposed to be like an hour-long surgery, I think, ended up being like a 3.5, 4-hour-long surgery. I did have a double procedure. I had an endometriosis excision prior to them starting the hernia, and that didn't take very long. They found some endometriosis and excised it, but again, it was kind of in and out. And they got in there, and what I was told when I woke up was that what we thought from all the scans, all the images that I had was one large hernia. When they got in there, I had what was called a Swiss cheese experience, which sounds like a band's name. And so, I know there's the cheese incident, the string cheese incident, but I just feel like the Swiss cheese experience is like the opener of them. Anyways, I digress. So they got in there and he was like, yo, you had four hernias and you had the one large one and then three moderate ones. So it was a bitch and it was a lot longer. And I woke up from that hernia surgery in excruciating pain. Like I have never experienced pain like that. Oh man, the trauma. I'm also starting ketamine therapy soon to help myself process all of this. So I wanted to tell you all the results of that so I can back up. When I went in, I would always joke after the transplant, like, yeah, these are gonna be like spa days. And they were like, yeah, we're gonna keep you inpatient just based on your medical surgery, your medical history. However, like, you know, there was no insinuation of how painful a hernia repair surgery was. I remember telling Kyle, like, yeah, like I'll have the surgery. Obviously, he came and like was there for the whole thing, and I'll stay overnight. He had to work, and he even asked, should I take work off? And I was like, no, don't. Like, I personally like having my space inpatient. I feel guilty like when he's there. He's also like a big guy, and like asking him to sleep on like the extremely uncomfortable. Anyways, I digress. Like, that's a whole another thing we're gonna get into the caretaker's point of view in season two. But yeah, so I was like, yeah, don't come. I was going in kind of rose-colored glasses because my first inpatient experience was great. So, and I was also like, and it's not going to be as major as that experience. And so I had that surgery. I remember when the surgeon came in, him saying, oh wow, I didn't realize your ribs were this low. And this comes in a second because this actually turned into, I would probably say, the most excruciating part of the surgery. And I was just like, oh, okay, whatever. Because the laparoscopic incisions are literally right over my lower rib. And so one of the worst parts, and I found out speaking to my primary care surgeon, was that with a hernia repair, what ends up happening is they're ripping away fascia from muscle and they're putting mesh in, and I was so unaware I have such a high pain tolerance. I was so unaware of the level of pain. And as I've told you all, I had to be taken, I believe I've stated this in the previous episodes, but to reiterate, I had the hernia repair surgery and I woke up. I found out I was, well, I found out a week later I was resistant to Percocet, but they didn't manage my pain well. Go listen to the previous episode if you haven't already about my worst inpatient experience I've ever had. And I did write a grievance letter. I just submitted that, I think, like a week ago. 10 pages, single space with references, baby. You got some appendixes in there, the whole thing. It was hands down, and how I was describing it was, and I don't want to scare any of you all, but what I do want to do is empower you that let's say you have an auto transplant, whether it's open or not, let's say it is laparoscopic or it is open. I mean, there's a risk of a hernia no matter what. Let's say you get a hernia. I would, if I knew what I knew now, I would go in and I would be more diligent about the pain management protocol post-op. I went in thinking like this will be a spa day. This is going to be interesting, and it was hands down just I couldn't move. Anytime I would move, it was like excruciating pain. I was yelling "fuck" like involuntarily. It was not good. So make sure when you go in, the thing my primary care doctor did tell me and really helped validate the experience for me, which was about a week and a half post-op. I had already had a scheduled appointment with him, thank God, because I went in and I started crying. He has been with me this entire journey. He's never seen me cry. And I just was like, I don't know which way is up. This pain has wrecked me. I'm not sleeping. My mental health is awful. I feel helpless. I am so depressed. And I told him about how I said, I think I'm experienced withdrawal. I think it's twofold. They didn't manage my pain properly inpatient. And I spoke about that in the last episode. And I did find research on how if your pain management is not properly managed acutely, so the first couple days postoperatively, and really that first week, that it increases the likelihood not only of you experiencing chronic pain for the rest of your life, which is scary to think about, but also gives you more justification on why we need to advocate for ourselves. And then two, it when they don't manage a pain acutely, it fucks with your neural pathways, your dopamine neural pathways. And I was experiencing it more intense depression than I've ever experienced in my life. And I'm on antidepressants, right? Like I was still chewing those babies up. I was taking them like candy, like they're like as prescribed. So I go in and I tell them that, and I said, and also they prescribed me hydromorphone, which is a pill form of Dilaudid. And I said, and I'm it like hit me. I said, so I was experiencing the depression and all of that, just like absolute deep overwhelm, intense pain of the hernia surgery itself that wasn't properly, the pain wasn't properly managed. But they also did not provide me enough pain medication from which to taper off. Nobody spoke to me about a tapering regimen. And so I want to empower you to A, talk about pain. Like if you have to have a hernia surgery, I think I was naive. I don't think. I know I was naive. I also think I was coping, and some of that coping was downplaying, like, oh, I've already like successfully experienced an auto transplant. This is going to be a spa day. I know that was me coping because of the medical trauma I'd already experienced up to that point. So I want to tell you these things so you don't go in thinking the same thing, because I just because of that, I was just like, oh, yeah, it's okay. They're gonna blah, I'll be okay. And I didn't actually go in and talk about pain management. I didn't. And also, to be fair, I don't want to necessarily like put all the credit or not credit on me, but like downplay like that I didn't do well. But some of the things too I want to point out is this is like, I had no idea about the pain management aspect. I had no idea that improperly managed pain acutely could lead to fucking up your neural pathways and your dopamine receptors and this whole nine yards. I had no idea until I experienced it. And as a professor, what do? I go gather data, I get onto the libraries, and I'm looking at all these articles, and I'm like, holy shit. Holy shit. Why did I not know this? But now I do. Sharing it with you, I've shared it in my grievance letter, I've talked to other people about it. Secondly, I'm talking to Dr. Thompson about that, and I'm like, actually bring the articles to him. I'm like, this, I want you, he knows I'm a professor. He knows I'm not a pill seeker, the whole of the nine yards. And I said, and then secondly, they didn't offer me a proper tapering regimen. So now not only was I experiencing the intense depressive symptoms of my pain not being managed acutely, but now I was thrust into major withdrawal symptoms that I had never experienced before. Now I've experienced withdrawal symptoms like on my transplant. I was on so much Dilaudid. When I was discharged, I was still taking oxycodone, but my body was definitely detoxing the Dilaudid. And that showed up as like sweating really bad at night. But other than that, I didn't really, that was about it. And I also was about 2.5 weeks post-op from the auto transplant. I didn't need any more pain management, or opioids, I should say. I would like kind of randomly take Tylenol here and there, maybe kind of as needed, and oxycodone depending upon the day. So there was that, right? So I was kind of going into the tourniquet repair surgery of like, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. It's laparoscopic. It's not open. And I. Dr. Thompson saw me and was like, yeah, you are in the throes of withdrawal. These withdrawal symptoms were like the depression, the deep depression I was experiencing was tenfold. I was like, couldn't create a coherent thought. I was staring at the wall. I couldn't get my responsibilities done at work. I was legitimately thinking like it would just be easier to not be existing right now. Now, I wasn't to the point of like, how would I, like, this is how I'm going to kill myself, but I was definitely in the suicidal ideation space of like, I am so, I don't even have the wherewithal to try to get through this. Kyle was even like, what's going on? Like, you are mentally not okay. And I was like, I don't fucking know. And that's when it hit me the night prior to my PCP appointment. I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm experiencing withdrawals. I had horrific diarrhea, heart palpitations. Like, I have POTS, posterior orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, which has gotten mild since my auto transplant. And I do have episodes from time to time when I don't manage, like when I notice, like, oh, I'm not actually hydrated as well, those type things. So I do get heart palpitations with that, but these were different. It was like just laying there. It was like my heart would just be palpitating. I was literally like, my chest would start hurting. And I tell Dr. Thompson this. I'm like, and I'm sobbing in the office with him. I'm like, I don't know which way is up. I don't know who I am. I am so depressed. And he's just like, yes, I've worked in addiction therapy. You're dealing with withdrawal. So he then prescribed me a tapering regimen to help me navigate that space. Thank God, because once I went, so the when I left that appointment with him, it was twofold. It was, let's get you on a tapering program. So we did start back, even though I was resistant to Percocet. Instead of, he didn't just give me hydromorphone. He gave me, instead of 5 milligrams of Percocet, he gave me 10 milligrams of Percocet. And then we discussed what the tapering would look like. And so I definitely, I was journaling as I went day to day. For the first full week, I took it as prescribed, which was 10 milligrams every 8 hours. That second week, I started playing around with it, which was doing like 10 milligrams and then 5 milligrams and then 10 milligrams. And then I'd do 10 milligrams, five, five. And I would kind of, so we had discussed that. And it was, and the other thing he told me to do was to up my Wellbutrin, which is one of my anti. I have two antidepressants. I'm on 10 milligrams of Lexapro and 100 milli, 150 extended version of Wellbutrin. And he said, "Hey, let's do. We'll do the tapering program with the 10 milligrams of Percocet, with the tapering protocol in place. Plus, I want you to double your Wellbutrin from 150 to 300." Now, as I'm a researcher, I'm a professor, so I like to control for variables. So I left saying, got it, cool. But I also decided, you know what, I'm gonna for the first day or two just take the Percocet. I'm not just gonna out the gate up my Wellbutrin because I wanna see, like, is it just the pain that's like, if I start this Percocet and I start this tapering program, how's my depression gonna respond? And if I throw both pills at it, then I didn't control the variables, so I don't actually know. So I started the Percocet and my depression did get a lot better. So I decided not to double my Wellbutrin. Now, I let my primary care know this. I also let my psychiatrist know this. My psychiatrist, she was fine with it, but she was also like, sometimes I think she's a little like, well, don't like starve yourself of what you mentally need. And I'm like, absolutely, I get it. But I just want you all to know, I'm not saying this is not medical advice to say to do that, but it was definitely something that I did for myself that made me feel better. And I've really just been struggling with the amount of medication I'm on. But going back to the hernia repair surgery, I got some mixed. I had some people that were like, oh, well, if you put the mesh in and your fascia, and I also do a lot of Eastern medicine stuff. I do acupuncture. So I am aware of the impact that having mesh in my abdomen has. I'm also aware of the fact that I just added another abdominal surgery onto the roster, so that increases the likelihood of a bowel obstruction in the future. The list goes on. However, I do look back and I am glad I did it because, again, it was way worse than what we expected. We thought it was just going to be fixing that one large epigastric hernia, and it ended up being. I actually didn't realize until I went to my post-op appointment, I think it was 9 days later, how bad. I walked in, I even sobbed in that appointment. I was just like, I am so tired. I am in so much pain. Still. And thankfully, Dr. Kuhler prescribed me hydromorphone in that appointment. However, he didn't give me enough to taper off, so that thrust me into withdrawal symptoms. That was some of what I did write in my grievance letter, was how doctors need to care about the overall well-being. And I understand there's CYA culture in prescribing opioids, but come on, like let's not be so CYA that we forget about these things that are actually ethical procedures in working with a client or a patient. So I go in and I said, yeah, so you said there were four total. And he was like, yeah, they were, you had the epigastric one that was showing, but the other hernias that you had were all, so my entire incision from top to bottom from my auto transplant was just hernias. I had mesh all up and down that entire incision. And then obviously they put wider margins there as well to try to mitigate any other hernias being created. So some of the things I just wanted to talk about is A, I want to talk about hernias post auto transplant. I want to normalize them. I also want to, I truly intuitively know that it is not the fault of UW Health. My primary care, the transplant surgeon here in Denver, gosh, and there was one other person I asked. They were all like, yeah, no, this isn't like they did something wrong. This is just, you had an open abdominal surgery, and that is a risk of that procedure. And then with the other intersecting variables, such as you lost a lot of muscle mass, things of that nature, that you were just at a higher predisposition to get a hernia. I decided to move forward. I was a little nervous getting this procedure, but I'm definitely glad that I did get it because. Cooler saying, based on this hernia, it could get bigger. And once it gets bigger, it could turn into a bigger problem later. And I didn't like that. I also knew I had my out-of-pocket max and deductible met. So get me on the surgery schedule. So this is zero payment for me. So there's a lot of variables into making a decision to have a surgery. And it's not just like for me, it was financial. I wanted to get the surgery done so I didn't have to pay and get into more medical debt. I also knew that Kyle and I are looking to potentially move somewhere else other than here. So I want to get all this medical stuff situated before I'm not near my medical support team anymore. I asked multiple people about their thoughts on whether I should have the surgery or should not, and I weighed that. I also connected with my own intuition on what I thought I should do. So this isn't me being like, yo, you get a hernia, you need to have a surgery. It is simply saying these were some of the things that led me to deciding to have this surgery. And the unfortunate truth was that it turned into the most traumatic and most painful surgery I have ever had across all eight that I've had in my lifetime, and especially the 7-part surgery saga series in the last 2.5 years. So I would say go into it almost treating it like it is. Talk about the pain management. Talk about like, hey, my primary care doc told me, yeah, this does make sense. This is a really painful surgery for you because a lot of the pain receptors are in the fascia. And so them going in and just basically ripping your whole abdominal fascia away from the muscle, like Absolutely excruciating. On top of that, where they had the incisions for the robotic, like the laparoscopic surgery, was right on top of my lower ribs. And I believe I did go to the ER. They did a CT about 6 days later. It wasn't noted that they had broken my ribs. I have broken my ribs before snowboarding, and this felt just like I broke my ribs. So, what I would venture to say, I feel confidently in saying that my ribs were severely bruised from the instruments laying on my ribs for that long and possibly moving around and doing whatever it was doing. Because I mean, even to this day, that area is still very tender. We're looking at, gosh, what are we, almost like a month and a half out from the hernia surgery. I am feeling a lot better, but it has, again, my whole abdominal wall has been compromised now. I am definitely not going to jump into doing any ab exercises now, but your entire body is surrounded by your center of gravity, which is your abs. And the more in shape your abs are, the more what is the word I'm looking like, kind of balanced your body is. And so what has been happening, and I've had to up, I do have the privilege of being able to afford massage sessions. So I've been doing those once a week now instead of biweekly because my back, for example, is taking the load. My glutes are taking the load. My thoracic spine, my cervical spine, all of those are taking the load. And it has really thrown my body into a fight or flight state. So I want to normalize the fact that, yeah, you might get a hernia and that's a risk factor of it. Maybe there are instances where it is the fault of the surgical team that did the surgery that maybe led to your hernia. But in this situation, I do not think it's any fault of UW Health. I've had multiple surgeons who don't have skin in the game with UW Health actually say that. I just wish I would have gone in less naive. I would have gone in a lot more direct on what is the pain management plan and what happens. For example, some things I wish I would have asked is like, well, what happens if I'm not, my pain level is still really high? Do I have an option for something such as a pain pump, for example? I wish I would have asked those questions, and that is something moving forward with any other surgery I have, on how are you, because of my medical history, I have had it happen where I wasn't responding to Percocet anymore. How are you all going to respond to that? How can we make sure that maybe we get ahead of it so I don't have to deal with that? I want to empower you all to think about that. I want you to not downplay a hernia surgery because, again, I even called the nurses line a couple days in a row to be like, is this normal? Like, holy shit. And she was like, yeah, we've had some transplant patients who then eventually need a hernia repair. And they say the hernia repair is like 10 times worse than the transplant. And I'm like, well, then why didn't you fucking tell me that in the beginning? I'm a mental performance consultant. I have a PhD in sports psychology. I help people prep their mental game to be able to experience in challenging situations such as competition. I do the same in the medical space. I literally have my mental prep, but because you all didn't tell me the severity of what the surgery would look like, I did not mentally prepare myself. And that, to some of the extent, that is not my fault. Because again, you all kind of downplayed this. There was no like the why is it that 5, 6 days after the surgery, I'm calling the nurses line and I'm just now hearing, yeah, hernia repair can actually be worse than the transplant. Why am I just now hearing that? So then what happens is I mentally prepared the best I could based on the information that was provided. And then when I woke up screaming bloody murder because I was like thinking that I woke up on the hospital table, I was in so much fucking pain. I then have these files on my phone of like pain management scripts that I do with clients that are dealing with injury, healing visualization scripts, all that stuff. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do, what would I tell a client right now? So I do that. I move into doing the pain management scripts while I'm inpatient, and I remember throwing my fucking phone across the room. And it gave me a lot of empathy also, like just enhanced my understanding of the work that I do in this space with injured clients. Because when your pain is constantly no less than like a seven, no less than a six, right? I think the lowest I had actually stated was a six. for multiple hours in a row and you're not sleeping, there's no fucking pain management script that's going to help you, right? Like at that point, you actually just need people to step up and give you pain management, right? And that was something that I really, not that I would ever tell clients like, hey, yeah, the pain management script it'll fix everything. No. And that really also, I have all these tools in my toolbox as a mental performance coach, as a person who has a PhD in sports psychology. I teach this shit. I worked with Major League Baseball players. Like, I am so confident in knowing how to use the tools in my toolbox. And I tried using all of them, more beyond the pain management and the healing and all that stuff. And they weren't working. And I just was like, that was when I really felt helpless. Because at this point, I really need to rely on these people that aren't showing up for me inpatient. And so, again, I go into more detail about that in the previous episode. But I did want to talk about there is a risk of gaining a hernia. I got a hernia from it. Something too with the UW Health and Joint UC Health publication that came out, I think it was a 2023 publication. And it did talk about people that got an auto transplant decrease their use of opioids, et cetera, which was great. There is a chart in there, though, that talks about post-op complications. And I think at UW Health, it was like out of 74 patients, only one person reported a hernia. And that is interesting to me. I need to follow up with UW Health and just say, like, hey, I did develop a hernia. I just want to make sure that y'all put that like in your data, because that hasn't been in any other post-op follow-ups with me. They haven't asked about a hernia specifically. So it does lead me to wonder the limitation of that study saying, oh, there's only one person out of 74, which is one out of 74 is still fairly high, but at the same time, it's not like it's a 50% rate. But it does make me wonder, is that actually fully represented of the people that got hernias because they didn't report it back to UW Health? So that's also something when you're looking at this research, there's always a lot of gaps. I'm always critically thinking about, well, how did you capture that? Was it because somebody came back and they reported a hernia within the first 3 months when you were actually following up with them more so? So if you have any questions about hernia surgeries, obviously drop them in the comments. I'm obviously not like fully, this isn't a medical advice. This is more just sharing what my journey is and normalizing that, hey, you could get a hernia. Hey, it might be the worst pain you've ever experienced, even in comparison to some of the bigger surgeries you've had, such as maybe a transplant. So don't underestimate it and go in advocating for yourself and talking about pain management, not only talking about pain management, but talking about what happens if I don't respond to the pain management being given. Can we up what I'm doing? I did not do that. So I want to share that with you all and say, hey, make sure you do that. Because it led to a pretty horrific experience for me. And again, what I am w wanting to do is come back around mid-January of 2026. I'm going to start ketamine therapy, a pretty intense ketamine therapy on 6 sessions in a 4-week time span. And a lot of it was because this hernia repair surgery thrust me into an absolutely horrific mental headspace that I wasn't expecting, Kyle wasn't expecting. It just wasn't great. So, again, drop your comments. If you have any just statements, say, hey, oh my gosh, I also had a hernia that developed after my auto transplant or after this that nobody really talked about and I didn't know about. Like, I think that could also help the audience say, like, oh, okay, this is actually maybe more prevalent. I hope it's not. Like, I don't hope that there's a lot of you that raise your hand and say, hey, me too. And at the same time, when people do that, it normalizes it so that people don't think, oh my God, I did something wrong. I have also been like, I did something wrong. Oh no, I did something wrong. I shouldn't have done this. And in reality, I didn't do anything wrong. And a lot of my surgeons have supported me in that. But still, it's hard not to shame ourselves on this road. As I do with most episodes, I just want us to take a second to take a deep breath, ground ourselves into this moment because you're doing the best you can with what you're given. And I hope this podcast is also adding value to your life. You are not alone. So I want to invite you, if you feel comfortable in doing so, taking a full deep breath through your nose. Filling your lungs, maybe even holding it at the top for a moment. And then when you're comfortable and ready, exhaling slowly out your mouth through your nose. Feeling more grounded in this moment. And taking another second to take another full deep breath in. Slow exhale out, maybe even with a sigh of just like relief. And I want to invite you to keep with that rhythm of deep inhale in, full slow exhale out, maybe even adding some gratitude in there, breathing in gratitude for self, breathing out gratitude for self, breathing in gratitude for others, breathing out gratitude for others. And keep with that cycle for as long as you would like, maybe into going into the next episode. But just know that I am here. I'm still navigating my journey, and my hope is to help make your journey a little easier.